It's my pleasure to speak to you this afternoon about physician adherence to recommendations to prevent post-vaccination syncope. Between 2005 and 2007, new routine immunizations were recommended for adolescents by the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. These immunizations included MCV4, Tdap, and HPV. Since 2005, the U.S. Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, or VAERS, has observed a trend of increasing cases of post-vaccination syncope. Between January 2002 and December 2004, 203 cases of post-vaccination syncope were observed, and between January 2005 to July 2007, 463 cases of post-vaccination syncope were observed. Of the 463 cases in January 2005 to July 2007, 78% were in females. 63% were associated with MCV4, Tdap, or HPV. 62% were in adolescents aged 11 to 18 years. 7% were reported as serious, and 10 cases from this 7% were related to secondary injuries occurring after syncope. So although serious injuries are rare, prevention of post-vaccination syncope is an important issue. The ACIP recommendations to prevent post-vaccination syncope state that vaccine providers should strongly consider observing patients for 15 minutes after they are vaccinated. If syncope develops, patients should be observed until symptoms resolve. Now, it's important to note that there are no specific recommendations about who should observe or where the observation should take place. And little is known about physician awareness and adherence to these recommendations. The objectives of our study were to determine in a nationally representative sample of pediatricians and family medicine physicians experiences with post-vaccination syncope and secondary traumatic injuries, current practices to prevent post-vaccination syncope, knowledge, attitudes, and perceived barriers to adhering to the ACIP recommendations, and factors associated with adhering with the ACIP recommendations. Our survey was administered between October 2008 and January 2009. The survey was conducted in two existing Sentinel physician networks, who were recruited from random samples of the American Academy of Pediatrics and American Academy of Family Physicians. Quota sampling was done to ensure the networks were similar to the overall AAP and AAFP memberships, and respondents practicing primary care for less than 50% of their time were excluded. A previous study comparing the Sentinel Network methodology to the most commonly used method of random sampling from the AMA master file found comparable results with respect to physician and practice characteristics and responses on surveys regarding vaccine-related issues. On the survey, physicians were asked about their routine practice in observing adolescents following vaccine administration. Information on the ACIP recommendations to prevent post-vaccination syncope was presented to physicians. Then physicians were asked of their awareness of the ACIP recommendations prior to reading the information on these recommendations. For the purposes of our study, we defined adherence to ACIP recommendations as routinely observing adolescents after vaccine administration and observing for at least 15 minutes. The analyses were restricted to physicians who reported immunizing adolescents 11 to 18 years. For the multivariate model, the primary outcome was adherence to ACIP recommendations. The independent variables that were tested in this model included physician and practice characteristics, experiences with post-vaccination syncope, and attitudes, barriers, and awareness of the ACIP recommendations. We had a 73% response rate overall, with 76% of pediatricians and 71% of family medicine physicians responding. Three peds and 19 FM were excluded from analysis because they reported not immunizing adolescents in their practices. This slide shows the physician-reported experiences with post-vaccination syncope after Tdap, HPV, and MCV4. 61% of all physicians overall reported that a syncopal or near-syncopal episode in an adolescent had occurred in their office, while 5% reported that a traumatic injury following post-vaccination syncope had occurred at an adolescent in their office. When asked if they routinely observe adolescent patients following vaccine administration, 51% of peds and 59% of FM reported that they routinely observe these patients. Among those who routinely observe, 63% reported that they observed adolescent patients for less than 15 minutes, while 31% reported that they observed adolescent patients for 15 minutes or more following vaccine administration. So based on the data presented on the past two slides, we found that 18% of peds and 16% of FM adhered to the ACIP recommendations. Among those who reported routinely observing, 80% of all physicians reported that the adolescents were observed either in the waiting room or the exam room with their patients. When asked of their awareness of the ACIP recommendations, 37% of peds and 24% of FM reported that they were aware of the recommendations to observe patients for 15 minutes after vaccine administration. This slide shows physician attitudes regarding post-vaccination syncope. You can see that the vast majority of physicians endorse the attitudes that traumatic injuries are rare, observing for 15 minutes is effective in preventing post-vaccination syncope, and post-vaccination syncope can result in serious injuries, while slightly fewer physicians endorse the attitudes that preventing post-vaccination syncope is a high priority, and that their practices could easily adhere to the ACIP recommendations. I'd like to highlight that for the last attitude, significantly fewer peds than FM endorse the attitude that their practices could easily adhere to these recommendations. When asked about reported barriers to adhering to the ACIP recommendations, overall, more peds than FM reported that lack of room space, patients and families are not compliant, staff is busy with other duties, lack of staff, and lack of waiting room space were barriers to adhering with the ACIP recommendations. This slide shows the results of the multivariate analysis and shows the factors associated with adherence to ACIP recommendations. Being aware of the ACIP recommendations, having adequate staff to observe patients, having adequate room space to observe patients, belief that post-vaccination syncope can result in serious injuries, and practicing in a hospital, university, or community health center setting were all positively associated with adhering to the ACIP recommendations. Factors that were tested in the multivariate model but not associated with adherence to the ACIP recommendations included these physician demographics, practice characteristics, physician attitudes, and perceived barrier. There are some important limitations to consider about our study. The information provided on the ACIP recommendations may have biased respondents' report of awareness. However, we did have high reported rates of not being aware. Respondents may have differed from non-respondents. However, we had a high response rate. Sentinel physicians may differ from physicians overall, but previous data suggests not. And the survey results represent reported practice, and actual practice was not observed. So to summarize our results, the majority of respondents reported that post-vaccination syncope or near syncope had occurred in their practices. More than half of respondents reported routinely observing adolescents following vaccine administration. However, only 18% of peds and 16% of FM reported adhering to the ACIP recommendations to observe for 15 minutes or more. The majority of those physicians who observe report having the parents observe the adolescents in the exam or waiting room. Most physicians were unaware of the ACIP recommendations to prevent vaccination, post-vaccination syncope and related injuries. Fewer peds than FM believed their practice could easily adhere to the ACIP recommendations. And lack of room space and staff were important barriers to adhering to the recommendations. So the implications of our study are that efforts should be made to more widely disseminate these recommendations, educate physicians on post-vaccination syncope and the potential for injuries in adolescents, better understand the practical implications of these recommendations, and identify methods to better implement these recommendations in settings with limited staff and room space. I'd like to just acknowledge my colleagues at the University of Colorado and our CDC collaborators, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Hsu, and thanks to all of our speakers. At this point, I'd like to open the floor for questions. I know there must be some questions. Don't be put off by having to come to the microphone. All right, then I guess I'll have to pose a few myself. Dr. Kalugar, I know that in conducting your follow-up to the various reports with your convenience sample, that there were some providers who were able to offer some ideas about how, from their perspectives, we might consider preventing post-vaccination syncope among adolescents. And so I was wondering if you could comment, for example, on some of those recommendations related to driving, recognizing that we'd need to try and gather some evidence to support effectiveness and so on with respect to any of the recommendations that were made by those providers.
Well, we ask some narrative open-ended questions, and we had very interesting suggestions from healthcare providers. One suggestion was, I have a list of them, so because I thought it's so interesting that I had a backup slide on this. One suggestion was to ask parents to accompany their adolescent kids, even if they can drive themselves. So that was one suggestion. And as you saw from our data, that would be a good idea because some of our children, they fainted in the car. Another suggestion was to ask parents to wait outside with a sibling, so the sibling does not see his brother or sister being vaccinated, because we had few cases where siblings fainted while seeing their family members in that situation. Then also we had a few cases who fainted after they waited for a little bit, like 5 to 7 minutes, and then they had been asked to go to their lab room for some instructions. On the way to that lab room, the patient fainted and had an injury. So more time to dedicate to observe the patients after vaccination was another suggestion. However, as we saw from last presentation, We've heard opinion from pediatricians especially that they really don't have enough space in their offices, especially when mobile clinics are being used for vaccinating children. So these were some narrative suggestions, and I may ask my co-author, Elaine Miller is here, so she participated. Do you have anything to add? Yes. I mentioned that some providers, they use preventive measures which they observed in practice. These are not evidence-based, but they know that they help. And these are candies, giving candies before the vaccination, or giving a glass of Coke. They observed that this helps, and we learned from some of the publications in blood donors that they really use these strategies which help. Yes, am I answers your question?
Sure.
Thank you, Robin.
Are you pretty comfortable with limiting this to like 18 and under, because usually 18-year-olds have to be accompanied because they are people under the age of 18 because they cannot sign their own consent, so usually once they get to be 18, it's less of a problem, or?
Well, there is no evidence-based stratification of what age would be more prompt to post-vaccination syncope. However, from previous studies, we know that the majority of those who reported these events were in age groups of teens. But we don't know, and that's why the recommendations are being revised many times, and we are looking forward for more robust studies and more data to come to refine the existing recommendations. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Nancy, and I'm from Allegheny County Health Department in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We have an immunization clinic on in our facility that operates 5 days a week, and we see a lot of adults. Sometimes we see anywhere between 80 to 150 adult, you know, folks a day, and most of your adolescents are in school during that time, say winter time, when what have you. I wouldn't say that we have a lot of adults that faint, but we see quite a few, and you know, we lay people that have a history of fainting or tell us up front, we lay them down and we vaccinate them, and that seems to offset those uncomfortable feelings and prevents the fainting, and we give them a glass of juice. I guess my concern is, and you know, being a coalition nurse, and you hear about all these new ideas of drive-through flu clinics and things like that, and you know, just getting people in and out. I would say probably the majority of those people are going to take their injections and, you know, drive away, and they're going to be fine. But even if it was less than 10% or less than 5%, you know, that would still be too many if someone would be behind the wheel of a car. And with the concerns that we have nowadays about people texting and putting their makeup on and eating a sandwich or listening to a radio, like, I just wonder if you guys have any thoughts about that.
The issue that you brought up with drive-through clinics, immunization clinics, you know, is an issue that we didn't directly address. We didn't ask about that in our survey, but I think you can extrapolate our implications that we really need to look at the practical implications of these recommendations. We need to think kind of outside of the box and not just consider what's going on in the physician office, but what are all the other settings that immunizations are being administered in, and really think about, well, if we truly want to prevent post-vaccination syncope and the traumatic injuries that could follow, what should we be doing?
Yes, sir.
I'm Dr. Du from the Kansas City Health Department. Have there been more reports on the Guillain-Barré syndrome among persons who received the H1N1 vaccine as compared to other vaccines? And do we know the outcomes of these people?
Dr. Karen Broder from the Immunization Safety.
Presented, but the we've been assessing the safety of the H1N1 vaccine in multiple ways, and We have many systems in place for the H1N1 vaccine safety monitoring, a very comprehensive monitoring system. Through the vaccine adverse event reporting system, which is our first line system, we have the evidence we've seen is that the safety of the H1N1 vaccine is quite similar to that of the seasonal influenza vaccine. And there are several other systems in place. The National Vaccine Advisory Committee has a risk assessment working group that reviews the safety data, and they actually post their reports on the web. So for those of you who are interested, you can go to the National Vaccine Advisory Committee site and look up their recommendations and reports, and you can see their assessments on an ongoing basis. There was also an MMWR that came out in December that described the first 2 months of data, and over the next few months, I would expect you'll see more publications coming out as the different systems accumulate data. Thanks.
And I have a question for Dr. Duderstadt. You made a comment about some providers having, I guess, written in, you know, that they had some concern about direct traumatic injury to nerves, and I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, that's something.
I know it's limited.
Yeah, it's limited. Usually it's just written in the narrator narrative. Often it's a patient who's submitting the report who says, my doctor thinks they hit a nerve, or things like that. So I can't give you much more information about this yet. I am hoping to review all these reports again to see if there's anything I've missed, but most of it's just, you know, patient report.
Okay. Well, thank you. Are there any other questions from the audience? Okay. Well, I have, of course, the required exciting announcements, the housekeeping announcements that are supposed to be read at the close of the session. But before reading those, just want to again thank you for attending this session, and thanks to our speakers, because we very much appreciate all the effort that went into putting together these talks and doing the research related to them. So please join me in thanking them.